What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the All In Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Mike Badzik, joined for the 65th time. This is episode 65 by my guy, Eli Cooper. What's going on, buddy?
Not much, man. Not much. A lot going on in the sports world. My Real Madrid boys got a dub in El Clasico over the weekend, so I'm happy about that. My Sixers get a little preview of the Nets tomorrow, so we'll see how we match up at least a little bit with them. You know, they know there probably won't be James Harden or Kyrie Irving,
right?
Still a good look, you know, to see how that's going. But yeah, for good news on the sports front for me so far.
Yeah, we get a chance to talk about some basketball today, something we haven't talked about and it feels like forever. But lots been going on. I was going to do a Masters recap over the weekend and talk about golf because you guys know I love golf and I love the Masters. I was so sickened by Hideki Matsuyama winning. I didn't even do it, but I was tuned into that. But a lot going on. We're talking hoops today. Do want to remind you guys to subscribe to the channel on YouTube. Hit that subscribe button. Give us a thumbs up if you enjoy our content and hit that notification button so you know when we go live with shows. And you know when all of our new content drops. So with that, you want to get into it, Coop?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, so today is, as we are recording, April 13th, which is Mamba Day. So it's been 5 years since Kobe's last game in the NBA, the historic 60-point game against the Jazz, where it was just really unbelievable to watch him down the stretch of that game. So, Coop, I know Kobe was your guy. So why don't you give us your thoughts on what this day means to you and everything around it?
You know, it's really like one of the few times that I sat and watched a basketball game in its entirety, and I enjoyed like every single minute of it. I was locked in to every single minute, every single moment. I remember where I was. I remember what I was doing. I was in college. I was up until, because you know those West Coast games are super late. I was up till 1 a.m. or whatever that game ended, 12:30, whatever, had class the next day. I skipped class the next day. whatever my morning class was, I didn't go because I was up so late watching Kobe's last game. And I, you know, that obviously that Lakers team was bad. And to be completely honest, Kobe was not good that final year. Like, he had his moments. But, like, throughout that year, he was pretty bad. And that's why he hung it up. He was like, sure. All right. I stink now, so like I'm just gonna hang it up. So to see him go out like on the very last time we ever got to see him touch a basketball in the NBA again, you know, and see him go out and have that kind of a performance was incredible, man. It was mesmerizing. It's like it's why if you were a Kobe fan during that time, it's why you loved him, you know, because he was capable of doing this on any given night, just because he had that mentality. And I always wonder how he would fit in today's NBA, you know, with his play style. I think he probably would be a better 3-point shooter and would shoot more threes, but like overall, sure. You know, and he'd probably be a little bit more ball dominant, whatever the case is. But, you know, we got a little bit of a taste of how he maybe would have translated, you know, and people talk a lot about, you know, he took 50 shots in that game and whatnot. Well, like no one watched that game to see D'Angelo Russell shoot the ball or Julius Randle. Like, no, give the ball to Kobe for one. Sure. Two, to even get 50 clean looks off, like, I don't think people understand how hard that is. Like, you couldn't go to a summer league game. Most of you, 99% of the population, couldn't go to a summer league game and get 50 clean shots off. I'm not talking about, like, just throwing up
five.
Right, that's what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like, people don't understand the kind of shape you have to be in to do that. And it's not like the Jazz were just letting him shoot. They were playing hard defense on him. They were competing, you know, and they were, I mean, he hit big shots down the stretch. They had something to play for. They were in the playoff hunt. So like that was a, you know, that was a relevant game for them, you know, and they didn't give him anything easy. And that's, you know, obviously that's not what he would have wanted anyway. And he hit big shots and big free throws down the stretch in that game. You know, so that was just an incredible day and a testament to, you know, the Mamba mentality, everything that Kobe stood for as an athlete. And it's sad, man, that he's not here to, you know, relive these moments 5 years later. after the tragic accident between that happened with him and Gigi. But you know, I think this is one moment that people will always be able to look back on as one of their favorite, even if you didn't like Kobe. Or you weren't a Kobe fan, you had to be a fan of this game and this moment in regards to his career.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. And the other thing too, that kind of gets forgotten about this sometimes, this game was on the same day, the same time as the Warriors going for their 73rd win. And the Warriors going for their 73rd win got kicked to ESPN2 so yes, that we could have Kobe's last game on ESPN. And I wasn't the Kobe guy. You were. I was a big fan. I was number 24 in high school because of Kobe. And to watch him down the stretch in this game after those 50 shots, you know, the first couple quarters, you know, there were times when it was a little bit cringy with all the shots. But, you know, you understand what was going on. And it was his last game. He wanted to give those guys a show. He wanted to give Jack Nicholson a show and Snoop Dogg a show. And that's what he did. And to come down the stretch there and hit clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot, it was actually unbelievable. I remember it too. We were in our college apartment. I lived with former guests of the pod, Todd and Taylor. At the time, it was the three of us, and we watched that game. And it was probably the most hype we were watching any game at that college apartment, because the clutch shots down the stretch, just a testament to Kobe's career and everything he stood for. So it is tragic that he's not here to celebrate. And that's one of the, you know, the things that kind of didn't get talked about enough, is that we're not going to get him for these moments. You think about Bill Russell at every NBA Finals nowadays, and you think about these greats as we see them age. We're not going to get that with Kobe. And these kind of moments are what we're going to remember. So I'm glad that Nike did this, that made this a day. I'm glad that we can talk about everything Kobe stood for, and this game in particular. It's really special. That was an unbelievably special game. So we miss you, Kobe. So, all right, let's move on then. We've got some current NBA topics to talk about. First thing we want to dive into is this ESPN list that they put out about a week ago, this top 25 under 25. So big topic of debate on all the sports shows, I'm sure you guys have seen. We're going to give you more reasonable takes on the matter. So ESPN did this. I believe they tried to do it at least based on potential, right?
Right.
So looking at the list, I'll just run you guys their top 10 real quick. Is that cool, Coop? And then I can ask you, and you can give me your gripes. How about that? So absolutely, we got Luka, Zion. I think those top two are pretty okay. And then LaMelo, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, De'Aaron Fox, 6. Your boy Ben Simmons is 7th. Devin Booker is 8. Bam Adebayo is 9th. And SGA is number 10. So from the top 10 and then really the whole list, what do you think about the list?
So my actual gripe is that it's inconsistent with what they're saying it's supposed to be. So if we're talking about the top 25 players based on what they potentially can be, Luka's not at the number one. Like, and don't get me wrong. Let me clarify. Luka's incredible. Okay. He's incredible. But can Luka actually be better than what he already is? Like, he's a finished product to me for the most part. I'm not saying he's not gonna get better. That would be ridiculous. He's like 20 or 21. But really the only areas of his game where you could really see potential, like major growth, would be from the three-point line as far as percentage and the free throw line, right? Mm-hmm. Those two things being more efficient, and that will kind of really happens for every young star, becomes more efficient with their shooting as they learn how to play basketball in the NBA on a consistent basis. So, like, to me, he's kind of capped as far as his potential of his talent. We have seen what Luka Doncic can be, you know, as far as, you know, a 30, 10, and 10 guy. He's not ever going to be more than that statistically or from a talent perspective. I don't know that he's ever going to be a great defender. And so you're really looking at two areas where he can improve. So if we're doing this list based off of, like, who's the best players under 25, then you can have him up at number one. But if we're talking about who can be even better, Zion should be at the top of this list, for one. Like, that guy – has That guy has endless potential, man. Have you seen what this guy's been doing lately? Like, they got him running the point. He's running the point, man. At six, what is he? 6'8" That maybe being generous, 6'7" 260, I think, whatever he's at now. I mean, and he's running the point. He's becoming a better passer. Like, there's nights where he's flirting with triple doubles, and absolutely no one can stop him from scoring in the paint. Like, he's like Shaq down there, which is crazy because he's 6'7", and they cannot stop him from scoring in the paint. He finishes everything on the post, and you know, most teams have been like getting rid of the post offense, right, out of their offenses because it's not a high quality shot. Zion post-ups is like the most efficient thing you could possibly have in the NBA. So not only that, and then you're running these 4-5 pick and rolls or 4 and a guard like setting screens for him where they pop, you know, where he's running the point and he's actually running the pick and roll and he's making plays for his teammates. I mean, and he hasn't even scratched the surface. Like, he's not even in the best shape of his career, like, as far as his body goes. So, like, imagine when he turns all that fat into muscle. It's over. It's over.
And it's already over.
Right. It's already over. But imagine when he really shapes out his body, becomes a better shooter and a more consistent shooter. I mean, God, the sky's the limit for someone like that. So I think if we're talking projections, Zion has the highest floor of anybody on this list. And then if we're talking projections, Ben Simmons can't be at 7. Ooh. And here's why. Now, granted, I'm Ben Simmons' biggest advocate and biggest critic. Okay.
Yeah.
So to a Sixers fan, I could be candid with you, or on this podcast, I'll be candid about Ben Simmons. In public, if you say something about Ben Simmons, you got to see me with the hands. But, and you're not a Sixers fan, then you got to see me with the hands. Yeah. But Ben Simmons is another player where if he gets a jump shot, it's over. Like, if he ever gets that confidence in his offensive game to shoot consistently from the perimeter and the foul line, it's over. Like, him and Zion are the only two players on this list to me where it's like, if they complete their games, what could you possibly do with them? And that's where I think if we're talking projections, he should be higher. Now, if we're talking production, he should be lower. You know what I mean? So it's like, to me, I don't, there's inconsistencies here.
Yeah.
I don't see where, to me, this doesn't match a projections type of list. And then in all cases, and you know, and but it also doesn't matter. It does also doesn't match like production. So it was inconsistent for me in those regards. So I would have ranked it a little bit differently. And if we're talking about where they're going to be or where we project them to be by the end of their careers.
Yeah. So I guess it kind of depends too on like, are we looking at what we think is going to actually happen, or what is the highest ceiling of these guys? If we're going by the highest ceiling of these guys, I would agree with you 100%. Now, I think if we're looking at this at Ben Simmons, he's been on this list 5 straight years. For 5 straight years, we've said, wait till that jump shot comes. It's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. I think we should close the book on the Ben Simmons jump shot thing. For the rest of his career, maybe we can close the book on that because it's never going to happen. You agree?
And that, yeah, and that's why it's confusing. And I actually I just posted something on Facebook that Ben Simmons is averaging in his fifth season, or I'm sorry, I think it's his fourth playing season, but 5 years since he's been in the league, he is averaging career lows in points, rebounds, assists, field goal attempts, field goals made, and his player efficiency has dropped by a full 5 points. Nice. So as great as he's been defensively, he is regressing on the offensive end of the floor, and that's an issue. But that's why I'm saying, if it's off of what is the projection? What projections are we talking about? Is it like what we realistically project them to be? What their absolute ceilings are? Like, or is this list based on production? Because and the other gripe I had before I let you finish was Donovan Mitchell in the top five. He's capped out.
He's finished.
Yeah, he's capped out.
It might
out.
Be getting worse.
Right, he is what he is at this point. So, like, how is he top five? But go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there. And I agree with you on the Zion point. From just – he has been unbelievable. Like, a lot of people are going to regret the things that they were saying about Zion early in his career when he was carrying all that baby fat and the Pelicans didn't know how to use him on a minute restriction. Right. You know, they're actually Stan Van Gundy is just now using him in this point guard role. He probably should have done that 40 games ago. And they'd probably be in a lot better spot than what they are now. But it's kind of unstoppable. He's playing the way that we always say Giannis should be playing, right? He's kind of doing what we say Giannis should do. You know, whether it's on the block, even at the high post or a short corner, like he's kind of unstoppable getting to the rim. Teams really don't know how to handle him. You wonder how that translates in the playoffs. You know, we've seen this from a lot of guys in the regular season. It doesn't always translate. I think his will better than most because of the strength, the athleticism, and the passing ability is really what sets him apart. I mean, he's got point guard passing skills, not dissimilar from a LeBron type. So I agree with you there. I put Zion at one and Luka at two still, because even if we're saying Luka's capped out, he's still probably a top seven player in the league right now. Yeah. And you just can't say a lot of guys are going to become that even at their potential. So
right.
I would have those guys. I agree with you on Mitchell. I think he's tapped out. I don't know how you can have him ahead of Tatum, first of all. You know, you think about Tatum, he's a guy, we just talked about Kobe. You know, he's a guy who can become that kind of a scorer for a team and lead them deep into the playoffs. You know, it hasn't been that good this year for the Celtics as a team, right? They've struggled. They're about a 500 team so far. But, you know, you look at their potential. You look at what he's done in the past. He can easily be a 27.5-point-a-game night guy for a very good team. I think he should be higher than Donovan Mitchell. I agree 100%. Do you want to talk about LaMelo Ball? I didn't know what to do with him because, you know, kind of a limited sample size. You know, even though he's played a lot of this season, he really didn't start to, like, turn it on until really those last, like, 20 games or so before he got hurt. So I really didn't know what to do with him here. I do think that it's kind of – I don't want to say foolish, but maybe short-sighted to say that I now like his potential more than a Jason Tatum or a Devin Booker. Based on those seven games, I think Devin Booker has a case here to be very high, especially if the Suns make some noise this year, which we're going to get to playoff contenders, but I'm sure we will talk about them. But those are the biggest gripes. And another name that if we're just talking about potential, if we're talking about how high does the ceiling go, right? If that's the question, Michael Porter Jr. has a case to be a top four or five player on this list just based on how high the ceiling can go. You think about the size and the shooting and the offensive ability and creativity from him. Like, he could be a top five player in the league at that ceiling. Now, I don't think he's going to get there because he's kind of a head case, it seems, and doesn't seem too committed to play on the defensive end, although it has been better this year. So I think if we're basing it on ceiling, you could probably put him a little bit higher. And one more before I let you say whatever you have left here about this list. I would put Halliburton higher as well. Ooh. Halliburton has been very special this year. I actually think he's got a strong case for Rookie of the Year. I know Anthony Edwards is going to get it because of the statistics. Yeah. Halliburton is a guy that I really like. He makes winning plays. He is, you know, I honestly would put him wherever you have De'Aaron Fox. I'd probably put him one spot below him. He actually makes that team mesh a little bit better than even De'Aaron Fox does. So I think he should be much higher on the list than 21.
Halliburton is an underrated player in terms of what he brings to the table. And obviously, because he's in Sacramento and they're consistently terrible and not a big market, people don't really realize that. You were high on him when we did our mock draft, and he has absolutely panned out. I like his game a lot too, so I would certainly I certainly do like him as well. I think, and if we're talking about, you know, who has the highest ceiling, I think you got to throw Anthony Edwards up there too. He's not in the top five, I don't think, but he's top eight, I would say, as far as highest ceilings, just because he's a freak athlete, and can score the ball. He has shown, you know, that he's already physically, as far as his strength and stuff like that, that he can handle NBA contact and stuff like that. Obviously, as any rookie under 20 years old, he has to get more consistent, which will come. I also think James Wiseman,
yeah,
if we're talking about highest ceilings, James Wiseman would be up there. So those, you know, those are some of the guys lower down on this list who I think didn't quite get, you know, as much. If we're talking about projections, I don't think they were really properly ranked here. But this is hard, right? Because especially when you're talking about under 25, that's a, like, you're talking about 18 to 25. There's a lot of good players. That's like majority of the league almost, yeah, that you're talking, yeah, about there. Like, the, it, you know, and you have those guys who are closer to 25 are going to have more production and a larger sample size and resume, right? So, like, how do you rank those guys versus these babies like LaMelo, Anthony Edwards, and James Wiseman who just came into the league and are just getting their feet wet? You know what I mean? And their potential is sky high, but they really haven't learned. They really don't know anything yet, right,
about right.
the NBA. So it's like, I understand the difficulty of this list, but I also think ESPN puts like a Donovan Mitchell in the top five to piss people off. You know what I mean? Like, at this point, you are purposely, yeah, trying to get reactions out of this list.
Well, it's also a respect thing, right? He did it in the playoffs.
True.
Last year. And you look at that and you say, well, you know, if nothing else, he's already this guy. How about this guy, Ja Morant, Rookie of the Year last year?
Yeah.
Comes in at 15th on this list. And, you know, obviously it's tough to say that any of these guys should be lower than what they are because of the potential, right? But you know, Rookie of the Year last year, incredibly young, you know, only 21 years old. When you compare him to, like, you know, like, I look at, like, a Brandon Ingram, and, you know, we like Brandon Ingram, I think, you know, but I think he's always going to be a guy who gets buckets on a bad team. Like, he's just not built for a winning formula, I don't think, anyway. And I think he's kind of capped out with where he is right now. So I would have had him probably a little bit lower. SGA, I liked at 10. I think I'm very high on,
yes,
SGA, so this is a tough list. I mean, this is tough to do, right? Because you're projecting out a whole career.
Yeah, agreed. So, yeah, and ditto on SGA, on both sides of the floor. I think he's underrated. But he's a nice building block for OKC there, with the millions of draft picks that they have. So that will turn out to be good for them.
Yeah. So, all right, let's do we want to give – how about we give each of us – we'll give our top five? Is that what you want to do? You want to go first?
Yeah, now we're going to do our top five based off of, like, realistic projections, or are we doing, like, best five players? I did realistic.
Okay, me too. So did I.
Okay. So I'll count down. So at five, I had Devin Booker. Mm-hmm. And some might think that Devin Booker is kind of, he is what he is. But I think there's an even higher ceiling for him. Like, he's ultra skilled. I think he's another one of those guys who has the ability to hit that, you know, 27 to 28 points per game on a good team type of score. I think he would have to get better defensively to get any higher on this list. And really, he's got the Suns a game and a half back, him along with Chris Paul. But he has the Suns team a game and a half back from first in the West. And, like, when they got Chris Paul and we ranked these teams, neither of us had them that high. And it's looking pretty certain that they're going to be one of the top two seeds in the West. You know, so it's kind of like all he was really missing was, like, a veteran point guard, a Jay Crowder type role player, Mikal Bridges coming into his own as well. You know, and we kind of saw it in the bubble, like, how good this Suns team could be going forward. They added the missing piece, which to me was Chris Paul. And now we're seeing him and Chris Paul and Devin Booker gel together. And we see that Devin Booker can lead a Western Conference. I'm not going to call them a contender, but a good Western Conference playoff team for now.
Sure.
You know, he could be the best player on a team like that. And to me, that makes him a top five player on this list. At four, I had LaMelo. Mm-hmm. So I do love LaMelo's game. I think the sky's the limit for him. I think he shot the three better than I expected him to. And I mean, he's an incredible passer, man.
So and that good. Was like, it's crazy. And,
you know, it's, and it's funny because when he was in high school, I hated his game. Like right when Lonzo was at UCLA and coming into the NBA, and he was in high school and he was finally like the go-to guy in high school. And he was taking these god awful shots. He was out of control. And I watched him get like locked up when he played against more athletic players. Like He's a totally different player from what we saw about 3 years ago. And that it's because of how much better he's gotten at passing, and really being a floor general, you know, in that regard, to where he makes people around him better. Like he legitimately had this Charlotte Hornets team looking like a competent, really good basketball team. Especially when he went into the starting lineup. I don't think it should have took as long as it did, but when he went into the starting lineup, he shot through the roof, and we saw a glimpse of what he can be. Now, you know, sample size is still small. And he has to get better on the defensive end. So his motor on the defensive end is what concerns me. But I got him at four.
Okay.
I had Jason Tatum at three. And I agree with pretty much everything you said about him earlier. I think the sky's the limit for him offensively. And I think he doesn't get enough credit for how good he is defensively either. He's a very good two-way player, but you know, he scores so easily. It's you know, people are gonna focus on that, but I think he can be one of those game-changing wings on the offensive end. So I had him at three. I had Luka at two, because like you said, even if Luka doesn't get any better, he's a top seven player in the NBA for the remainder of his career, and there's only one other person who can stake that claim or really has that kind of potential, in my opinion, for a decade or longer. And that's Zion, who I have at number one for the reasons that we mentioned earlier.
So I just want to let our listeners know, like, we do not do a pre-show meeting. We don't really talk about this stuff beforehand. We kind of just say what we're going to talk about, but we don't really discuss the details. So I got the same five. I got the same freaking five. Not a surprise here. I did flip LaMelo and Devin Booker. And reason being, just Devin Booker from a scoring perspective, still give him a little bit of an edge there, but wouldn't be surprised at all if LaMelo ascends a little bit higher. And then Tatum at three. I think Luka and Zion are 1A, 1B. Can't go wrong with either guy there. They're both sure things. But I'd probably go Zion based on just what he's shown this season. So,
yeah,
I'm shocked we had the same lists. It always happens, man. So, all right, let's move on then. Our next topic today, Kevin Durant on Twitter trouble again.
Yes.
Once again, we are shocked to hear that Kevin Durant is stirring it up on Twitter. This time against Shannon Sharp, NFL Hall of Famer and undisputed host on Fox Sports. So I think basically, and I'm not on Twitter, okay, so guys bear with me. I had to get filled in by the Eli about this. Shannon quoted a fake KD quote in which he said, but he didn't actually say, that because he beat LeBron and LeBron's the GOAT, that now he's the GOAT because he beat LeBron twice. KD hasn't said this. There has been reports about him thinking he was the best player in the NBA after he beat LeBron twice, but the GOAT thing is kind of out of left field. He didn't say it. They went back and forth, not really back and forth so much. I don't think Shannon, you can probably fill the people in better on this than me, but I think Shannon didn't go at him. KD kept saying how he was lying. Shannon eventually blocked KD, if I'm correct, and KD said, oh, but I'm sensitive. I saw that one. Am I missing anything here?
No, I mean, you've got it dead on. And the reason I wanted to talk about this is because Shannon Sharp is a member of the media now, so which qualifies him as a journalist, right? So like what he said in a way.
Yeah,
so he is obligated to a certain standard as a journalist. I'm for context, I'm a journalism graduate. So the ethics of journalism are very important to me. So I take this very seriously. And as a human being, you're going to get things wrong. And with the way the internet is today and all the fake crap that you see out there, it's very, very easy to fall for a quote like you saw on that picture. That's been circulating for a couple of years. And he ain't the only person who fell for that or thought that was a legitimate quote, because it's just people. It sounds like something KD might think or say, what I mean? So it might have some merit in some people's minds. But what you can't do is go on to national TV and perpetuate a lie. And then when you get pressed about it, say, oh, hold on, we could talk about this in private. Well, you didn't mind telling the lie in public,
even if
you didn't think it was a lie at the time. And again, I'm not mad at Shannon for messing up. What I'm mad about is he didn't own it. To me, like before he even responded to KD, he responded to someone else like, oh, well, was the tweet where he said, everybody's joining up and blah, blah, blah. You know, that tweet he sent about the Lakers. Everybody wants to be on the Heat and the Lakers. What happened to going at each other? He like used that as like a defense to someone checking him, like pressing him about using that fake tweet. And that has absolutely nothing to do with what you said on your show today. And the fake quote that you use. So like that's the first thing he did was he tried to deflect and be funny about it. And then KD's like, yo, like, why did you tell this lie on national television today? Knowing that not only are people gullible on social media, especially when they see it on TV, like, come on, of course people are going to validate that and believe that that's something that KD actually said. So now that he's addressing you on a public platform, after you bringing this to a public platform, you have an obligation to own that mistake, retract it, and then apologize. That's all. That's all Shannon Sharpe needed to do here was say, hey, I now understand after receiving more information that this was not something that you said. Mm-hmm. I apologize for basing my opinion off of a lie. And saying that lie on national TV, I was misinformed. I will retract it on tomorrow's show, or I'll retract it here on Twitter, and I'll retract it again on tomorrow's show. And then, boom, it's done right then and there. But what you can't do is then say, oh, you know, I'm not hard to find, KD. You can hit me up in private. I'm not going to go back and forth with you. It doesn't need to be a back and forth. Say sorry. Apologize. Quick. It's over right then and there. He don't even have to respond to you. What KD doesn't have to do is go out of his day to try to find your number and call his agent, say, hey, give me Shannon Sharpe's number, set up a meeting with Shannon Sharpe so I can sit down and tell him something he already knows, which is that he lied on national television. KD doesn't have time for that. He's in the middle of a season. Just apologize, retract it, let it go so that both of you can move on. So because now he's talking about we can settle this or we're not going to go back and forth. You're making it a back and forth by not just owning it right then and there.
I agree. Kevin Durant is a funny guy. He is a funny guy.
He's the best follow on NBA on NBA Twitter. The best follow.
Well, you know what? You know, at some point, you know, and we talked about the Michael Rapaport thing off the air. Me and you did. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, maybe, you know, Kevin Durant stepped over the line with some of that stuff. I think this is different, though. This is
This is
warranted to come back and say, you lied about me on national TV. You're not just some random guy, Michael Rapaport. You are Shannon Sharpe. NFL Hall of Famer, you're on TV. And can I also say, like, you know, and I think you summed up everything well, so I won't repeat what you said, but, you know, the reason why a lot of people hate LeBron has nothing to do with LeBron. It's this. It's Shannon Sharpe going at KD and saying, y'all remember the fake account when KD said, everybody want to play for the Heat and Lakers? Let's go back to being competitive. And then KD joins 73-9 Warriors, builds Nets into a super team. Oh, my God, crying face emoji. The only reason he's saying this, the only reason that Shannon is so hard on KD is because he is so obsessed with LeBron. Yes. And listen, I love LeBron, too. I think LeBron is the GOAT. But when you are over the top like this, and you are just like for no reason doing this, that actually pushes people away from LeBron in a very serious way, right? Yeah. So I also think that that should be pointed out that like this is a weird thing now. This became weird, right? So the whole Skip Bayless hating on LeBron thing has been weird. The Shannon loving LeBron thing has become weird. It's over the top.
Well, and it's why I don't watch sports talk shows like First Take and Undisputed anymore, because they're at this point they're not even giving us their actual opinions. They're legitimately taking sides on specific hot topics so that you will watch them debate them and then pick a side because it's good for ratings. I don't know that that's really good for ratings anymore. Because
people are over it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, people are over it. People are tired of hearing Shannon Sharpe be LeBron's cheerleader, essentially. Like, dude, you were a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Like, you are a Hall of Fame NFL player. And, like, now you are known for being a LeBron super fan. Like, that's more people will know you for being a LeBron super fan than the NFL great that you were because of the nonsense that you're spewing on Fox, and it's just so fitting that he's on a Fox-owned network spewing lies. Fox News might be knocking at his door tomorrow morning saying, hey, can you do this for us? But, it's the kind of thing that people are tired of, man, is media creating narratives to fit specific agendas instead of just being truthful and being honest and being authentic.
Well, and this is why I think the podcast platforms are swooping in and just taking over these sports discussions. Mm-hmm. Because we have the ability to be nuanced, right? Me and you, and I'm not just talking about us, although we are really good at what we do here. And you should subscribe and tell your friends. Also, like, we're not afraid to be wrong, and we're not going to die on our hill. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
We're not gonna die on this hill. Like, you think about like the Max Kellerman, Tom Brady thing, or like, you know, this Shannon with LeBron thing. Well, he'll do anything to praise LeBron, or Skip Bayless, who's the antithesis of that, where he will do anything to hate on LeBron. And you pick that hill, and you will die on that hill, no matter what the topic is, or who is involved, or what you have to say. As long as you stay on your hill and you stay in your character, right? I don't want to say that they're acting, but they're in character, right?
Yes, 100%.
Very Alex Jonesy on these sports debate shows. Also, like, I do think there's a larger conversation about the way dialogue works and about the way dialogue has – now I'm going off on a tangent, but the way dialogue works in our country, where it kind of tracked with our political dialogue.
100%.
From 2012 to about 2018, we were very much in this debate, debate, debate. We love the debate. This is how we should talk. This is fun. This is interesting. We've now kind of entered a post-mortem of that, right? And we see this in politics now, all the messages about unity and empathy and understanding. And I think we're in that direction now with how we talk about sports too, where we don't like the debates so much. We'd rather hear two guys – like me and you talk nuanced and like smart people about sports.
Right. Exactly.
Interesting topic for sure. I'll be interested to see if Shannon does end up owning up to that. So, all right. Let's move on. Probably the biggest NBA news right now, as far as the actual games and things go. Jamal Murray tears his ACL. Out for the season. Just a bummer. Anybody who tears their ACL, it's a bummer. But for a young guy like this, who really just, you know, emerged last year in the playoffs, and you were wondering, you know, the Nuggets were really starting to come on. You're looking at them. They had Aaron Gordon, and we really liked this team. You wonder what they can do in the playoffs with these three guys. And for him to go down, it just sucks. So go ahead and give me your thoughts on Jamal Murray.
Yeah, it was awful, man. For two reasons, because the first reason is because after they traded for Aaron Gordon, they won seven straight with him in the starting five. Seven straight, five of those included Jamal Murray, and then he missed two games and then came back against the Warriors and tears his ACL. So we got a very small, but a sample size of what the Nuggets might look like come playoff time. And the reason that this is a bummer is because with the addition of Aaron Gordon and with how Jamal Murray and Jokic's two-man game, which was so lethal in the playoffs last year, up until they saw the Lakers, was getting even better. Like, you know, I thought I was reading an article on ESPN that was talking about how the gap between playoff Jamal Murray, like from the bubble, versus regular season Jamal Murray was closing, which he was becoming a more consistent version of what we saw in the bubble last year. He was great in the bubble last year.
He was crazy, and
when he's that good, he makes Jokic unstoppable in that pick and roll, pick and pop game that they run, because whatever coverage you throw at them, guys were not able to stop. If you went under, Jamal Murray's hitting a three. If you go over and you play drop coverage, he hits a pull-up jump shot. If you switch, Jokic destroys whatever guard switched onto him in the post, or Jamal Murray exposed whatever big man switched onto him on the perimeter. And or if you doubled Jamal Murray or blitzed him, whatever you call it, then Jokic would either pop for a three, wide open three, or pop and get that little 4-on-3, you know, where he gets downhill and he has either a dump off or a kick out. You know, that there was no coverage for Jamal Murray and Jokic pick and rolls. You know, and Aaron Gordon, I think, was giving them the boost that they needed defensively and as an additional, you know, as a two-way player for them. They were starting to gel. Michael Porter Jr. has been coming on. And then now this happens, and it's just like, you know, from a playoff perspective, I just don't see how they can get out of, depending on the matchups, because they're looking pretty solid for like a four seed. Maybe they can move up to the three, but they're looking pretty locked in at four. Yeah. So where they're going to get like Lakers first round, where LeBron is probably going to be back. And it's just like, I don't think they have a chance at winning that series at all without Jamal Murray, unless LeBron is not playing for some reason, if he's not healthy by then. That's really the only way that they could get out of that. And then let alone the second round, I just don't see a path for them out of the second round. You know, if they were to get out of the first round. So it just sucks, because I thought this Denver team might be a legitimate contender out West. Yeah. Because of all the injuries and things like that, the West is kind of open right now. So it sucks. It's terrible news for the Nuggets and just for the NBA in general, because the Western Conference playoffs just got like a little bit less exciting.
It did get a little bit less exciting, especially when you're kind of like looking at the standings and you're looking at these first round matchups and you're like, holy crap, these are second round matchups in a normal year, right? Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Like, we would have had Denver and the Lakers, Clippers and the Blazers, the Mavericks with Luka against the Suns. Like, I think it would have been really special. But I'm with you. Like, I just don't see how the Nuggets can overcome this. And I'll tell you, I love Monty Morris. We talked about this. I don't know why I've brought him up on the podcast. It feels like a few times before, but I am a big fan of him as a backup point guard. But, you know, is he going to be enough? Is he going to be that shot maker? Probably not. I do think LeBron is looking like he's going to be back. I think AD is going to be back in, I think, like a week or two from now.
Yeah, that's what they were saying.
So I imagine they'll be at full strength. But, yeah, I'm with you. I really was loving this Denver team. And it's kind of, you know, when we did our trade deadline podcast, we talked about Aaron Gordon. It was coming to fruition, right? It was pretty much what we were thinking. It fit almost perfectly. He was like the kind of the perfect missing piece for them if they were going to have Murray and Jokic be their two guys. So it's a shame. I also have Jamal Murray on my fantasy team. That's not as important, but also is important to me. So, yeah, bummer.
The only thing that it helps is Jokic's MVP case. He was kind of, you know, with Embiid and LeBron getting hurt, he was already distancing himself. But like now, towards the end of the season, if they stay in the four seed, there's no like drop off. It's going to be hard. Even if Embiid plays really good, it's going to be hard for him to for his case to be better than Jokic.
Yeah. Well, imagine this though. Like, if they fall, and it's probably conceivable, like the lowest they could fall is probably the sixth seed, right? And that's not inconceivable at all. They're only 2.5 up on the current sixth seed. I think we're going to look at this MVP race, and at some point we're going to have to say, we just have to give it to Giannis again. He's just too solid. There's nobody else that we can give it to,
right?
Based on injuries, mm-hmm. You know, unless they say, you know, forget the injuries and let's give it to Embiid for how special it was. Maybe that happens. But yeah, so all right, let's kind of just transition to playoff contenders. So you want to give your top five in order, how you like them?
So before I do that,
yeah,
since we're talking about the MVP, is it weird at all that the two best players on the two best teams are not in the discussion, like, at all? Donovan Mitchell and Devin Booker are not in any way, shape, or form in the discussion. Like, I think when the NBA released its recent rankings, Booker was, like, dead last at 10, and I think Donovan Mitchell might have been, like, 8 or 7, which at this point in the season is not in the discussion. Is that, like, that's, like, strange, because the precedent has typically been, like, best player on best team, and that's not at all what we're going to see this year.
Well, let me, and this kind of lends into our other discussion, but do we really like those teams as top contenders? Like, do we really actually believe in the Jazz or the Suns? And I'm going to kick it to you to give me your list on top of that.
So, I don't believe in the Jazz. Yeah. I believe in the Suns a little bit. Because I think the Suns are better defensively, with Mikal Bridges, Chris Paul, Jay Crowder, you know, DeAndre Ayton can protect the rim. Like, I think their five is a better two-way five than Utah. I think Bogdanovich is a little, suspect on that end of the floor, and can be exposed. And so is Donovan Mitchell, if we're being completely honest, especially when, you know, we're talking about, you know, first round, they probably get past Memphis, but second round, they're looking at Denver or LA.
Right.
There's going to be some tough that's going to be a tough matchup for them. So I don't see them getting past the second round, but I do see the Suns getting past the second round. I think they can beat Dallas. If they don't let Dallas go crazy from three, I think they can beat Dallas. Definitely. And then they're going to have the Clippers or the Blazers in the second round. I wouldn't sleep on the Blazers upsetting the Clippers. Any team with Paul George as one of its top three players could lose at any point in time.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, you know what I mean? Like, because Pandemic P could show up at any point in time. And if we're looking at roster construction, I think the Suns are up there with the Clippers. And I think the Clippers the Suns have what the Clippers don't, even though they added Rondo. They don't have Chris Paul. They don't have a legitimate floor general who can control the game and also knock down perimeter shots consistently to space the floor. There's, you know, as great as Rondo shoots the ball weirdly in the playoffs, I'm still living with that. So that's where, that's the thing that concerns me about them. And they don't really have that pick and roll presence that I think you need in the playoffs. Whereas the Suns have both Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton that can run pick and roll late in games and go to get them buckets. So the Suns could be a conference finals team. So I have them fifth on my playoff contenders list.
Okay.
In fourth, I do have the Clippers, because ultimately that second round matchup will determine who loses to the Lakers in the conference finals. But I do have the Clippers in fourth, right ahead of them. I have the Nets in third.
Ooh.
And listen, everyone's, like, super hype about, you know, all the talent that they have and everything like that. But when you ask me, I understand that offense is incredibly important in the NBA. I really do. And that you have to be able to score. But the teams that win championships defend, man.
I know what's coming.
At the end of the day, the teams that win championships, you have to defend. You have to be able to guard somebody. And they don't really have a defensive stopper. Like, KD's improved on the defensive end. And I would say, like, I think he's a good defender. There were a couple of people who did not agree with that statement when I said it on Twitter. But I think KD's a good defender.
He was great when we saw him with the Warriors last.
Well, yeah, and they're like,
Achilles, but
right, and then they blame the system. Whatever, it's always the system with the Warriors, not any of the individual players that make the system. Always the individual. It's always the system. But whatever, like that.
Steph Curry's the best point guard of all time. I decided last night.
Yes, agreed with you there. But we won't rant on that today. We'll address that another time.
Sure.
But yeah, so I think KD's like the only like in that five, you know, that big five that they have, if you include Blake Griffin and LaMarcus Aldridge, KD's the only one who plays defense on that team. And like what people don't get is one, Blake Griffin's a backup center at this phase of his career who can't defend in any situation. So like if he's giving you bench minutes and he has to guard Embiid, how's that working out for you? Totally. You know what I mean? Like, and then even if we're talking about the Bucks, who are you putting him on if the Bucks decide to go small and put Giannis at the five? Who's he guarding? He's not guarding Giannis. That's a nightmare. Even if you collapse the paint, you don't want Blake Griffin guarding Giannis.
Right.
So I mean, to me, it's just like who's LaMarcus Aldridge going to defend? Because he's not a good defender. He's not a good defender in pick and rolls. He's not a rim protector. So it's just and we all know James Harden doesn't play any defense. Kyrie's a below average defender. So it's just I don't see who's going to be the guy that they put on the other team's best player that gets them stops. So as great as they are offensively, I see them running into a Phoenix Suns Steve Nash era, which is ironic because he's their coach, but I see them running into those similar problems where they just can't get stops when the game slows down. At two, I do have the Sixers. I think the Sixers will come out of the East this year. I think and Embiid's just been flat out dominant, and I just don't see a team in the East that that can stop him in a 7-game series, fully assuming full health.
Yeah.
I don't see a team that can consistently deal with him in a 7-game series. So I have them at two, and then I have the Lakers at one. Again, assuming LeBron comes back fully healthy, which I think he will. Anthony Davis stays healthy. They're the defending champions, and ultimately someone has to dethrone them. I also think the Andre Drummond pickup gives them so much versatility in their front court. You're talking AD, Marcus Gasol, Montrezl Harrell, and Drummond as your consistent 4 and 5 rotation. There's so many different things you can do there, whereas Gasol gives you the stretch five and pick and roll defense and rim protection. Andre Drummond can just go in there and muck it up, go get rebounds and crash the glass and just be a physical presence. You know what AD brings. You know what Trez brings. So I think just throwing those constant bodies in that front court rotation is going to be a lot to handle for an NBA that has gone small. I think it's going to be tough for them to find matchups where they have front court players who can defend LeBron, AD, and then whoever's at the five, like Trez, Gasol, and Drummond in that rotation. That's a lot to deal with. And with Schroeder now giving them some perimeter pick and roll play, I still like the Lakers as the top playoff contender.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be the Lakers number one, assuming LeBron and AD, which, you know, that's not an easy assumption, right? Based on the health this year, like they both have been hurt. So I wouldn't 100% pencil them in as the favorite, and I wouldn't 100% assume their health. But assuming they're the number one. I got the Nets at number two. The scoring is a lot, man. And you know, I'm a big proponent of getting buckets down the stretch in the playoffs. They've got three guys who can do that at an incredibly high level. Nick Claxton, that's their best big guy. That's true. It's not LaMarcus. Blake Griffin really should be getting like 10 minutes a game. And honestly, he might be getting 10 minutes a game come playoff time. Bruce Brown is a really good bench piece as well. So I still think they're the second best team and probably the favorite in the East. Those other teams, they've just shown us year after year they don't have the bucket getter down the stretch. So in third here, I have the Clippers. For the reasons you mentioned, they've been hot lately too. I still like Kawhi in the playoffs as the best player on my team. I still love, you know, if he's my guy, I feel confident that he can always get to his spots. Seem to have turned the defense on in the last couple of weeks. Yeah. Him and Paul George have turned it up a little bit. Something that we haven't really seen from them since they've been with the Clippers. Maybe that's a change. Maybe it's just a temporary thing. We'll see. But I still like them, besides the Lakers, better than anybody in the West. Fourth, I have the Suns here. And for everything you said, I don't trust the Jazz at all. Suns, you know, you think about, like, who their closing five is going to be, right? Because that's honestly a lot of times what this comes down to for picking these teams for the playoffs is who's the closing five. It's probably going to be Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Ayton for sure. And then you're probably going to have Bridges and then Cam Johnson or Jay Crowder.
Yeah.
It's probably one of those. I like that five.
I do too. Johnson. I love it.
Johnson is our share of pride and joy.
Yes.
You know, he obviously burned me by transferring, but I don't blame him. So I still like him and I still claim him as a Panther. So I don't mind. But I like that closing five from a defense perspective. They all can shoot. Besides Ayton, but he's like this big force in the middle that a lot of teams don't have. So I like them fourth. I do not have your Sixers on this list. I'm sorry.
Wow, really?
They've just done this year after year. Like,
not number one seed though.
Yeah, but I don't trust in the playoffs. They're gonna have guys around Embiid. They need ball handlers who can score. Tobias Harris is not who you think he is. Listen, Coop, I love you, Eli. You know I love you. I love you almost as much as your fiance and daughter do. I don't want to see you get your heart broken again, man. I'm trying to stop you now. I'm trying to protect you from what's coming. Listen. They're going to break your heart, man. They're going to break your heart, okay? It's not going to be the first round, okay? They're going to breeze through the first round. But the second round matchup, and the team I have fifth on this list – I think is going to beat them, and that's the Miami Heat. When you talk about, Heat culture, baby. Yeah. Okay, grit and grind. You talk about defense in the playoffs. Okay, like they've got defenders. Bam, Jimmy Butler. They add a Trevor Ariza. They got Iguodala, Precious. Like they can just throw guys at your best player and wear them down. Right. Think about the guys they can throw at and be bam. Handles Embiid almost as well as probably anybody else in the league. That's not saying much because nobody can handle Embiid really, but he does a good job and at least wears him down to where other guys have to get involved. And that's where I think Philly's downfall ultimately comes from. It's not going to be Embiid's fault, I don't think, this year, assuming he's in shape like I hope he is. And you also think about like a Dragic when he gets, you know, come playoff time, he's a different player. You remember him last year.
Yeah.
This time last year, we weren't saying his name at all, and he was a completely different player in the playoffs. Now, Tyler Hero hasn't taken this big leap like we might have expected, right? But I think he's serviceable. He can be a shooter, and Duncan Robinson can be a shooter. These guys get hot, and they play defense the way that they're going to. The defense is the certainty. It's the offense that's the question. And you got a guy, Jimmy Butler, that you can kind of form around. Right, and you got Bam Adebayo, who in the Eastern Conference semis last year against Boston was the best player on the court, including Jason Tatum and Jimmy Butler. So I like the Heat here to eventually get it going and make a run. They made a run recently. They added Vic. Didn't work out, right? He got hurt. That kind of sucks, right? Yeah. I think that could have really been a nice piece. But I actually don't hate that he's not going to be there to – yeah, I don't want to say mess up the flow, but he takes a certain amount of shots. He demands the ball a little bit, maybe too much. It doesn't really fit. Not saying that I wanted him to get hurt or that it's a good thing for them that he got hurt. It obviously would have helped to have him as a bench guy. But I still like this Heat team better than the Bucks or the Sixers.
You know what? I'm not mad at you for that. I would have been mad if you said the Bucks because I don't think the Bucks
can mess with us. No, not the Bucks, man.
But, yeah, I don't think the Bucks can mess with us. But the Heat scare me more than any other team in the East, and that includes the Nets. You know, and I'm that's the hill that we talked about. I'm going to die on the hill that the Sixers are better than the Nets, but I won't die on the hill that we can, that the Heat can't beat us in the second round, because for all the reasons you just said, and Bam, one of my favorite big men in the league, I think if I got to do an honorable mention on my list we did earlier, he might've been sixth. Yes. Just because he's just so versatile. There's nothing that he can't do. And if he can extend his range out to the three, but anyway, the thing that concerns me about Miami is the inconsistency offensively that they've had this year.
Yeah.
And it's mostly because of Tyler Harrow. Like he hasn't been good this year. It's not even that he hasn't taken a leap. Like he's been pretty lackluster. He's been
worse than it was.
Yeah, I would say he's been worse. And like that, he was a big part of their playoff run. Like he got huge buckets for them down the stretch. Uh-huh. And don't get me wrong, we all know that Jimmy Butler can be that guy for you down the stretch. But like sometimes you need help. And I think I'm worried that there's a little bit of that Tyler Harrell's been figured out a little bit, and Duncan Robinson. Not that Duncan Robinson's like shooting it badly, but like he hasn't looked the same either. Like there was a one point where he was like, man, how do we defend Duncan Robinson on these triple handoffs? And he hasn't really lit the world on fire this year either. So, you know, health goes into it. And I think if I could trust that Oladipo would be healthy, I'd put more weight on them, but I'd probably have the Heat at like 6-7. Mm-hmm. If we extend that list, they're up there simply because, and you know, for the reason that I picked the Sixers over the Nets, they defend, man. Yeah. At worst, even if, you know, guys aren't hitting shots, the Heat are going to defend. And that ultimately is what keeps you alive in playoff games. And then if you hit enough shots down the stretch,
sure,
you can pull off wins. So especially in series where they get to see you night in, night out and adjust to you, the Heat should scare anyone as they did last year. Remember, they were the 5 seed last year. So like not that much different than what we're seeing from them this year. And they went to the finals. So in no way, shape or form should anyone be writing off the Heat just because they haven't, you know, gone regular season wise, haven't gone into that stratosphere. They're built for the playoffs.
Well, they are. And the thing is too, like, you know, and I don't like to compare college to NBA because they are very different games. But I think if you look at playoff NBA, it's a little bit more similar to a March Madness type atmosphere, right? And you look at a team like Baylor, right? And Baylor's strategy was kind of like, we're going to strap up and get in a rock fight. And we trust that we can slug it out and be tougher, and we got these guys who can hit shots, and if they hit shots, we're going to win. I like that strategy, right? They're never going to be out of these games, right? There's nobody that I would be like, they're sweeping the Heat.
Yeah, no, right? Not at all. Oh, agreed, 100%. And really, that kind of strategy often disrupts teams, especially finesse teams who are not built to be physical.
The Nets.
Like the Nets. That is something that can give you a ton of problems if you're a finesse team, because and we saw it with Gonzaga. Someone posted on Facebook that Gonzaga looked like the AAU team that hasn't seen the Hood team yet.
Yeah.
When they play until they saw Baylor, and that's like, listen, that is a legitimate thing, man. I had it happen this year with my team at Columbia. It's a real thing.
I'll tell a quick story about how my high school basketball career ended. We went to playoffs and we played a team from Bald Eagle. You probably have heard of Bald Eagle. It's closer to your way. Still a district six, but they had athletes and guards, and they picked us up 90 feet, and our guards just couldn't hang. Couldn't hang, and I was one of them. And we got our ass handed to us because we couldn't handle the pressure. NBA teams can handle the pressure, right? Those guards can handle it, but that doesn't mean they like it, right? And also, when you're dealing with a 24-second shot clock,
right?
That's the thing. That's the thing too, and that's why I like. So I was really excited that we were at 1 hour, and I was like, "Oh, we're gonna wrap up the show 1 hour. We did it finally. We're not gonna do it." But you know, I like college teams who pick up like a three-quarter court. And the reason I do is because it forces you to get into your offense a little bit later. Right. Yep. So instead of starting your offense with 23 on the shot clock, you start your offense with 18 on the shot clock. And then if that first and second look isn't there, you're in trouble. Right. So, yep. So kind of the same concept here with teams that can defend in the NBA. And now there's only a 24 second shot clock. So if you don't get your first or second look, you're in a one-on-one situation.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. So, all right. I will actually, that was the last thing that we were going to talk about today. Good job by you, Eli.
Thank you,
sir. My friend, why don't you tell the people what is going on at the All In Network?
Yeah, so we just had a new All In Politics episode come out. They talked about some important topics, obviously the passing of DMX, rest in peace, DMX. Uh-huh. So they did a little tribute to him. They talked about Biden's recent gun control executive orders. And then also the Derek Chauvin trial and the Matt Gaetz investigation.
Yeah, that guy is goofy.
Yeah, so it's a can't miss episode, if you ask me. There's some great topics that they get into. You can find that on our YouTube channel. So make sure you guys hit that subscribe button and turn on notifications. So when we go live or when we post new content, you'll know right away. My mock draft for NFL 2.0 mm-hmm. just came out this week. So, and that includes the Sam Darnold trade, him getting shipped off to the Panthers. So how that affected the draft, you can find that on our website at allinnetwork.net. And then make sure you guys are heading over to MyBookieAG and use that promo code ALLINPOD. You get 100% of your deposit matched for anything under $1,000, minimum of $45. You can bet on anything there. They have NBA League Pass. Like, you can watch all the games on MyBookie as well on the website for free. They're offshore, so you can get all the NBA games there, watch them, bet on them. I'm a big proponent of, if you're going to bet on NBA games, live bet. Because it's impossible to predict inactives and who's sitting out on what night. So get those live bets in,
and everybody makes a run. So if a team goes down by 12 in the first quarter, bet the money line because they're going to make a run.
The early lead is always the worst. So a little advice. So use our advice, use this promo code, and go make yourself some money at mybookie.ag. But yeah, thank you guys again for tuning into another episode of the All In Podcast.
Yeah, so we appreciate you guys. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Also, if you guys have 1 minute, write a little review for us, either on Apple or Spotify, or leave a comment on YouTube. Let us know what you want us to talk about, what kind of topics, and we will do it. If you have a guest that you think would be a good guest on our podcast, maybe someone else you listen to, let us know in the comments. We'd love to connect with them and maybe do that. So, all right, guys, we appreciate you tuning in. This is All In Podcast. We will talk to you guys next week.
See you guys.